Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Joining me now in the studio, Mr. Hugh Weber. He is the host of the Potluck Society. You can find that on iTunes and other places where you get your podcasts. Also find it on listen.sdpb.org. Hugh, welcome back.
It's only been a week, but it feels like months.
Doesn't it? Big event coming up, December 1st.
Absolutely. All this right. Friday night.
This Friday.
6:30 registration, 7 o'clock general time. Tickets still available at sdpb.org/potluck. So we'd love to see as many people as possible. A great lineup. Many voices you've heard over the last year.
All right. So let's talk about who's coming to the potluck today. Mr. Adam Burke.
We are bringing Adam Burke today. And Adam is, he's hard to define. So he's a social innovator. He's a community organizer. He's based in Portland, Maine. I met him a number of years ago wandering one place or another. I think it was actually the Middle East. I think it was Qatar. But that sounds more glamorous than it is. It was very sweaty. But Adam does so many things that it's sometimes hard to define his work. But he has this phrase, cultural architect, that I think comes really close. He explains a bit of what that means to him.
Yeah. Well, going back to your question of like, who am I and what do I do? There's never been an easy answer for that. And cultural architect is a term that I've played with over the years as a best attempt to try to describe what it is that I do. And I think it is that, culture is this thing that I don't know if you can fully intentionally design. It's this mishap of like environment and what you have access to, and then what you're able to make and you're able to eat and you're able to do with those things from a academic perspective. And we celebrate that in retrospect, but at the beginning it's all accidental. Like we happen to be a people in this climate and this place and this time with these tools, so we can make these things, we can eat these things. Now what I try to do is bring a degree of intentionality that I think we've been able to gain over the history of the human race to think about, all right, so what is the culture that we want to create? We're beyond the accidental phase of cultural creation. So what are the attributes that I want culture to have that others want it to have? It's an evolution of the vision statement, if you will, from an organizational perspective. And then what are the things that have to be in place for that vision to come to fruition? And right now, it's my work there is really this engagement of bringing together different groups of people. It's to even see each other, to even approach that kind of work. Obviously, as things are so tense and polarized in our country at large, that we're a little bit restrained in our ability to design the world that we want, perhaps. So I'm taking a step back, perhaps, from focused on the outcomes. And right now I'm focused on setting the conditions to be successful in creating a world that we want.
I love this idea that we're past the accidental phase of culture creation.
Well, it's really enlightening, right?
Yeah, right?
I had never considered that the way we do things, so many of our practices and processes and the way we communicate in this region, as much as the eastern seaboard of Maine, is accidental. It's a function of what was here and what we ate and how we are as people that arrived here. I think it's really fascinating.
Give us an idea of a specific project so people can really kind of get their minds around what he does.
Yeah, so one of the projects he's collaborating on right now is called A Seat at the Table. He calls it an exercise in radical listening aimed at pushing people outside their comfort zones and judgment, which I think is interesting. So this may be around perceptions of the Muslim faith, or it may be discussions of politics at their intersection. But what I was really curious about in this was how he designed such a diversity of experiences, from his TEDx event to these small group design groups for the people that join him.
Well, part of it is just the basic design of the space and how people are taken care of, how they're brought into it, that people aren't put into a conversation or an exercise where anxiety hasn't been remediated in some way. So I could just welcome a bunch of people into a room, or I could not welcome. I could just say everybody show up in a room, they show up in a room and there's some instructions on the floor and everybody has to implement those instructions somehow, right? Like anxiety is going to be extraordinarily high. Maybe I've turned the heat on. Maybe I haven't turned the heat on. Like there's all sorts of levels of human functioning that may not have been considered. But if I have a space that's lit but not lit too brightly, I have someone at the door that's welcoming people in, say, hi, I'm Adam, it's so good to see you, guiding them towards whether it's the name tags or here's some food, make yourself at home, I hope you'll meet so-and-so over here, this is their first time too, start doing those things, then people are more available or not, depending on which approach you take to even get into the exercises. So that's where I start. And then we've done investigations of trying to understand people's habits and styles more. So we did a study of events for introverts and just did a whole journey map of looking at what were all the steps in which an introvert takes at an event. And we saw that, we used a wall to build this, and then we used another wall, and 2/3 of the wall all happened before the event even happened. All this, the process of, am I going to go? Am I going to go again? And all that sort of thing. Up until we found that once they're actually at the event, that having, again, these space considerations taken care of, it's not too loud, it's not too bright, and that they're not forced to just interact with somebody face to face, but they have some, we call it the common object, that there's something they can look at that's kind of between them or outside of the two people that they can start using as a focal point for conversation, that introverts in particular feel far more comfortable in that situation. So we implement insights like that into our designs as well.
We could do a whole show on introverts, couldn't we now?
Yeah, he is running a laboratory. I mean, yeah. Like he really, and it's all with such a pure spirit and pure intent. Before this conversation, I've known Adam for a couple of years. Before this conversation, I didn't realize his background was actually in social work, which is where he started out, which I think is fascinating as a foundation for creative community and social justice oriented community, that he starts with this very one-on-one intent of really talking to an individual on their own terms and creating a context in which they can thrive.
So today we've talked about generosity. We've talked about healing and sanctuary. I think maybe 3 times I've heard the word slow down. Nice. So let's talk about that sort of taking care of yourself and slowing down and being thought. I mean, he's intentional. He's thoughtful. He, you know, contemplates things. How does that relate to just really, you know, looking at yourself and taking care of yourself?
Yeah, that's a perfect softball question to ask for this, because it's right where this last clip ends up. You know that I have a lot of conversations with community builders and community leaders each week, and I feel like I've been hearing more than ever about the burnout or just the exhaustion, and part of that's the season. But Adam felt like he had seen a lot of it as well. So he always has struck me as someone who recognizes the importance of the self-care that you discuss. And so I asked him specifically, how does he build resilience as he dives into this often complicated, uncomfortable work of community? And what does he recommend for others in that space?
I think there's some self-care practices that are foundational and helpful. I think that's eating well. I think it's whatever form of exercise works for you and keeps you moving and not sedentary. And I think it's some sort of mindfulness practice, whether that's formal meditation or not. But I think those create the conditions, like just in our bodies, to be able to withstand the shocks that are continuously hitting us from outside of ourselves, as well as the ones that are going to emerge from within, which is part of doing this work too. You know, you can't confront bias. You can't do work with people that are different than you without getting a shock internally. Like, oh, I didn't think that's who I was, or, you know, that's not what I meant, but that is what I said. And there is an element of like, I meant that. No. Okay, now I got to like sit with that, and I got to be strong enough and to hold space for myself to be like, all right, that is this thing that I don't want to have, whether it's a racist thought or belief and one form of bias, right? Then what do I do about it next? And so if I'm not strong enough, if I don't have a container that's strong enough for myself to even sit with that moment, to change it, to reflect on it, and to ultimately do differently, then we're not going to be able to do that collectively. So individually, taking care of ourselves in those ways. And then it's finding these trusted friendships. You know, my friend Chanel Lewis, we call each other's partners and community. Chanel's a young African American woman, and she and I are dedicated to doing this work together. And we have our friendship that allows us to have conversations that are messy, that allow me to discover things about myself and she herself that perhaps we wouldn't otherwise if we always had to have our guards up, if we always had to be avoiding being human per se. So those are my ingredients for building resilience and doing this work.
The first thing I did after having this conversation with Adam is I called my nutritionist, who I met with this morning. I moved the rowing machine into the house. It had been in the garage. And I texted a couple of dear friends that I know that I can have messy conversations with.
All right.
You know, in that kind of context, whether it's short-term stress or long-term kind of discomfort, I think it's really sound advice that Adam offers.
There are your marching orders for today. Slow down. Figure out how to take care of yourself in a way that you can withstand those sort of daily shocks that you can't do anything about. Might involve moving your exercise equipment a little closer to your bed.
<That's>
Hugh Weber, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time as always.
Thank you.
See you next week.